These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a five-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's RINSE.com.
Wait, what was that look for?
It was just like that thing where like I come in and I get ready to record and then Matt comes in to be like, should I close the doors or something? It's like any excuse to like.
Do you think here's the thing. Do you think Matt wants to do a podcast with you? Do you think Matt?
Yes.
What do you think the theme of it would be?
You know how boring that podcast would be?
I would love it.
He'd be like, what's for dinner?
And you'd be like. Okay.
And I'd be like, ah.
And you'd be like, this is, and but everybody would relate to it and it would be so entertaining.
Yeah, actually, a friend just sent me like a video that was like, oh, this is my husband reacting to like me having been in a terrible accident. And they use like the background of like a hospital and she's pretending to be her husband with like a hoodie and a hat and like hands over her face and like shaking her head. And like it's from the vantage point of like the wife, it must be in like the hospital bed looking up at him. And then he's just like, so what are we going to do about dinner? And you're like, that's so real that it's like the saddest, truest thing. What are we gonna do? And you're meeting me here? On the interwebs? Oh dear.
So I, full disclosure, I have a little tickle in my throat. Uh-huh. I have a cough. It's so annoying. I know. Can you believe online, on the interwebs? It's almost rude at this point. No, I think it might be allergy related. I'm actually in denial that it's anything but allergies. So that's where I'm at emotionally.
Because you basically when you can't hear me, be sick because you have to perform every second of every day.
Correct.
For the rest
that's
of your
actually,
life.
That's actually correct. We had like 2 days off. I am like Dumbo.
Always had to do that too. Work, work, work. You and Dumbo.
Work, work, work. Me and Dumbo. But it's like it's fun work because Dumbo made his own show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's also interesting work because you're like, I've put myself in this position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've done this to myself. Dumbo could actually blame the weird people in the circus. Me? I
you
am
are
the
weird
people
person.
In the circus.
You are the circus.
Yeah.
Be the,
I am
circus
the circus
you want to be.
Be the circus you want to be. Look at this like fun Free People jacket that I said was your Mad Eye Moody jacket. Was that offensive
you
last week?
I'm still wearing it. I haven't changed since we talked.
Newly?
I own it.
Oh my gosh. I actually have to tell you, there's like a couple updates. Am I giving you updates? Okay. So I went to the Titanic Museum yesterday.
Titanic.
So fun. And by fun is maybe not the word that I would use, but it was interesting. I was in Southampton, United Kingdom, heard of it. And interestingly enough, like a lot of the people that worked on the Titanic were from Southampton. So they were like talking about like sort of like the circumstances in which the people that were working there joined the Titanic. And there was this one guy. And I'll probably cover a bunch of these cases later. I don't know why I'm telling you, but here it is, a little preview for a couple weeks down the line.
Yeah.
But these four friends, imagine, Leo, Fabrizio, Jack, Fabrizio, and two friends. They're like going to work on the Titanic, and the two guys run in front of a streetcar.
Yeah.
And they make the boat, and the two guys that are held back wait for the car to pass, and they miss the fucking boat.
And they live, and the other two die.
And they live.
I mean,
and
there's so many. I mean,
there's so many like
what
that.
What would be crazy is if they just also died, but for different reasons that week.
Yeah, it's Final Destination,
it's
Titanic.
Final Destination.
So I'm in an Airbnb today, and I was looking at my phone because I am a
human being,
evolved human. Yes. Yeah. And I knocked the shit out of my head. Can you see it?
My God, why? You banged. I do say it's like a real knot.
It's like a real knot. And, you know, but here's the thing. And I did it in solidarity for my little nephew. So I was in the Titanic Museum and my mom texted me and she was like, call me when you get a chance. And I immediately, I don't know if anybody else out there does that. If my mom texts me, call me when you get a chance.
Who died?
Someone's dead.
Yep.
Someone's fucking dead. There's no question. Mm-hmm. Who is it? You go down the line. You go, grandma, dad. Well, who? What?
Maybe
what's happening?
You should write, no one's dead. Call me when you get a chance.
Yeah. So I call her, and I'm like, my heart's racing because mm-hmm. I'm in a constant state of fight or flight here on this tour. And I get this call, and I'm like, well, I got to go home early. I got to figure out how to cancel shows. I got to see what's going on. And my mom's like, everything's okay. Well, she didn't say that right away because I was like, is everything okay? And she's like, everything's okay. But she talks about my little nephew, and he was at school the other week, or I'm sorry, not the other week. He was at school on a Saturday with his family. My brother was there.
And they were like, please leave, it's Saturday.
Like, what are you doing here? It was like a little event. Tommy was playing at the playground by his school, but Tommy fell and he's lost two teeth and his teeth went through his lip.
Yeah. Oh. God.
And he has stitches.
Terrible.
It is so sad. Update, I have talked to him since then, and he's in, like, decent spirits, but he has to be in an all-liquid diet for 2 weeks. And he does not
like ice cream. What is it? Oh, God, because I was like, milkshakes is all that comes to mind.
I know, and he can't eat, like, hot food, so it's cold soup. But they sent, my mom was like, I'll send you a picture. And see, she sent me, truly, horrifying picture. Can I show you?
Yeah. Oh, please.
Oh, my God. So sad.
Oh, baby. That's brutal.
It is like, it's a kid. He's just so sad. And he has stitches on here and here. And his spirits, like, I just talked to him and it's been like 2 days. And his spirits are coming back. But like, oh, my God, my poor brother, my poor sister-in-law. Like, their back was turned and, like, you know, that shit happens. Like, you can't prevent shit like that, you know, and you feel so odd. I just, like, my heart hurts for everyone in that house. And so.
Yeah, it sucks having a hurt baby.
It sucks having a hurt baby. Speaking of hurt babies, how are your babies? Are they sick still? Where are they at in the illness Richter scale?
Everyone's okay right now. No emergency rooms or anything this week. I think we've done pretty well, actually.
Do you think you're out of the woods?
I would say, I mean, you're always in the woods, into the woods and out of the woods, and always making dinner.
Don't.
I think that we've had like a good week with the kids. They've been, I got to spend a lot of one-on-one time with them this weekend because Matt worked the AIDS walk and I just like hung out with them all day and they're funny. They're a funny duo. You'll like this anecdote. We went to a birthday party on Saturday and a group of moms was standing together in a circle, maybe four of us. And one of them turned to the other mom and was like, so when your son's birthday party tomorrow, that's at which park again? And she's like, this park. And then it was a very charged atmosphere because all the moms in the circle were invited to the party except me. And I already had known actually about it. Just, I can't remember why I knew. I think another mom had told me about it. But it was not, it's not weird she didn't invite me.
Okay.
Our kids are not very good friends. And he is friends with those other mom's kids.
Yeah.
And they all went to preschool together and we didn't go to preschool with them. And basically it was just like one of those things where we're in the same social circles, but it was not at all insulting or at all surprising that I wasn't
You're
invited.
You're like, I wouldn't invite her to our house, right? Like,
I'm sure we've had a million parties we've not invited them to. It just wasn't. And I really like her. And I like her husband. And like, I just went to his concert that he does like these concerts.
But you're just like not there yet. You're not like at that level.
Well, it just was one of those things that like truly I wasn't bothered except the fact that we were in a circle and three moms were asking her questions about it. And I knew how uncomfortable she must be where she's like, oh, my God. So I like did not know how to behave. Like, it was like there was no graceful thing to do. So I was like, I'm going to go and get a seltzer. And I like crept away. And then obviously she came up to me at the party and was like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, it's not a big deal. And I said what I just said to you less, but like said that a bit, basically where I was like, I'm not upset. And she was like, well, you guys should totally come. I don't know why I didn't invite you. You should definitely come. La, 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 la. And then I couldn't decide
if you should go or if I should go.
Because yeah. I was like, she got put in a corner where she had to invite me. But at the same time, if I don't go, does she continue to feel weird? I don't know. It was very tricky.
Did you go?
What ended up happening is that another set of kids that were supposed to be at that party couldn't get there because of the Brooklyn Marathon. The roads were closed.
Oh.
And those kids were supposed to not only be at that party.
Did you do have a competing party and invite all those people to your house?
No. But what ended up happening was those kids, they weren't invited to the party, that second party either. But the point being, Koa likes these kids. He was excited to see them. When he found out he wasn't going to get to see them at all that day, he burst into tears and was so dramatic and was screaming and howling, I hate the Brooklyn Marathon, and was like howling.
Aww.
So the next day I was like, you can go to this party where you're going to know like a handful of kids, like six kids. They're going to play basketball. There's going to be cupcakes. It's a party. Or we can visit these other kids that you didn't get
yeah.
to see and you were so upset about. And he was like, I really want to see them. And I was like, whoa, that's so powerful. Okay.
Oh.
Because Griff was like in a bad mood that morning. I was like, I don't really want to take Griff to a birthday party. And he was like so clingy. Like he was on my body all day long.
Well, didn't he just come back from a solo trip with Matt?
Yeah, more or less. For sure. So I think like that's the whole thing is that like since they've come back, he's definitely been like.
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah, I just didn't want that in the recording.
Oh. Well, since they've come back, Griff's been a little bit. Mama's boy, which is so cute. And he like wants us to snuggle at night with our heads touching and our arms like around each other. It's like so intense.
Well, Griffin's an intense little dude. He's pretty, yeah. I mean, like he's not like, which I like. Like if he doesn't want you around, it's like he doesn't even want to look at you. He will not see you. He will not acknowledge you. But if he wants you around, he wants like undivided attention. He wants full contact. He's a black and white kind of guy, you know? I kind of like it.
Totally.
No middle ground with that guy.
Yeah, they're both very emotionally driven children.
Where do you think that comes from?
I don't know. Not me. Didn't get it from me.
Oh, God. Okay, so obviously I went to Costco and I was like, we got to find some like sweet treats or something because we have candy for our audience members to write down their meet cutes, as I've told you in previous episodes. And we go in and I'm like, okay, I'm here in Costco. If I'm here, there's one thing I need to get. We all know what it is. Kirkland pesto. I need to get the fucking pesto Kirkland because usually I'm on the road. It's like, I can make a little pasta, throw some pesto in. We got a fucking meal. I get to the pesto part of the store because I know where it is. It's like I'm a magnet. I'm a moth to a flame. And I get there. They don't sell Kirkland pesto at the UK Costco. They sell some other bullshit brand that I didn't trust that I was like, I can't get this. I can't get this. I don't trust it.
No.
And then I had like their little like pesto pasta salad that had some of it in it. And you know what they said? They said there's no preservatives in this pesto. It's really good pesto. And I said, you lost me at no preservatives. And I walked away. I said,
give me preservatives.
Give me preservatives. Give me fake cheese or give me death. And then, today we were driving from Southampton to Southend-on-Sea, which is in Essex. So it's like across. We went like south of England and we went all the way across to the East Coast where we have a show tomorrow night. And we stopped at a cute little farm shop that was so cute and we got so many delicious cheeses and I just had a cheese picnic for dinner and I love nothing more than a cheese picnic for dinner.
Girl dinner.
Oh, girl dinner. We had little fresh figs.
Hot!
Bless you. We had fresh figs, little apple. Although I fucked up I got the wrong crackers, Quinn. I thought these crackers would be good. It was like olive oil, fig and honey crackers. that sounds great, right?
Was it too sweet?
Too sweet.
Yeah.
Way
I
too
told
sweet.
You that. Sorry. No offense.
Offense taken. Anyway.
I'm really good at ordering.
I know you're really good at ordering. I know you're really good. That's like a super special skill you have. And I typically think that I'm good at ordering. I fucked up on the crackers. It's okay. I still ate them. Don't worry your little head.
Okay. Well, we got to get going.
Okay. By the
frankly,
way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily. That's
I'm
Quinlan Posner. And I'm
Carrie Imama. We're going to thank Stacey F.
Stacey F. It's F stands for friend. Stacey F. Your F stands for fun. Stacey F. Your F stands for flirt. Stacey, you're a fun, flirty friend.
Stacey, we'll meet you in Spacey.
Stacey, you're not Kevin Spacey. Thank God, because that guy is a fucking creep. Stacey, you are fun and flirty and a friend.
Hey, I just read a thing that's all these celebrities.
Yes.
Like, enough. Let the
I
guy come
heard.
Back. And I'm like, what?
You know what? It's so funny because we talk about, everybody loves to like bemoan cancel culture. I don't know if you're familiar with that conversation. Mm-hmm. And someone who had said it, I think her name is Liz. I'm trying to think. She has a great Instagram called Feminista, I think is her Instagram. Anyway, she's great. She has really good takes. But she's like, you know, the same people that decry cancel culture are also big supporters of capitalism. And here's the thing about capitalism. You put your money with things that you want. And if someone's a fucking creep, I don't want to put my money towards them. So it's not necessarily, it's like the free market. People love to support, celebrate the free market, but they hate cancel culture. Like you can't, you get, what is capitalism
like
if not cancel
confused.
Culture? Do you know what I mean though? Like,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know if that made any
but
sense.
But I did love The Usual Suspects. Moving on. Let's sing a song for Carrie's therapist because she joined again under the name Autumn.
Autumn. You are so not a bottom. Autumn. You are
totally a top.
Autumn. You're a top in our high, in our house, in our hearts. Autumn. Don't let us fall for you because you probably are far away. And have some friends to let you in on the day. Autumn.
And you are like a leaf falling from a tree, and you'll never know what you mean to me.
Because maybe. I don't want to finish that. I think that was good.
No, it can't end it because maybe. That's cool. That's a good, cool ending.
That is cool.
All right. Heather C.
You mean so much to me because Heather C, you are a weather in the storm to me because I love your weather vane. I think that makes sense. I don't really know. Heather C, look out the sky. It's a sea to me because you're such a blue aura and you mean so much to me. Heather C.
See, we told you so, Heather. That's good. And then just a shout out to, well,
big ups. I
always say her name wrong. You remember our Irish listener that we love? That I say her name wrong? I'm gonna play how you say it. Oh wait,
not Saoirse.
Don't listen to this ad. It's this one.
It's you have your headphones in, Kate Quinn, so I can't hear what you're hearing right now. Oh, Quinn looks so confused. She's listening to how to say this name, and she's more confused than ever is the problem.
Kira. So our listener, Kira, and her Mamela Pamela have been longtime
Pamela.
Listeners.
Yeah, of course.
And I think, I can't remember if they were subscribers at a certain time and then no longer but became again. Anyway, I saw Kira's name come up on our Patreon, so I don't know if we ever sang to her. Maybe we like it was like
we probably did,
maybe
but we mispronounced
wasn't ever
her
subscriber,
name.
But I shouted her out. I can't remember, but Kira, you are unbelievable to me. And so is Mamela Pamela flying through the sky into my heart and into my fart.
Kira Shira, You're Mamala and Pamela and Quinn and Ben and Carrie is Harry. That's all fake.
Why is your name spelled in a way that's so confusing? Ask Ireland. I just had to text Matt in all caps, my oyster crackers came. Because I ordered oyster crackers from Amazon because I made soup the other day and I won't eat soup without oyster crackers.
How old are
you? So it's just been sitting in the fridge. And I was like, it's fish chowder. It's going to go bad. We got to get these oyster crackers.
It's fish chowder. Of course, that makes sense.
You can't eat fish chowder without a...
I've seen you eat soup without oyster crackers, but you're very specific that it's a fish chowder. That makes sense. That makes sense.
That's fair. You would do the
same. That's more than fair.
All right, who's first today?
It's, I think 173 is the episode, right?
Okay.
Yeah, and so if it's odd, you're starting. So you go first.
Okay. I'm going to tell you the story of Jane Kendall Mason. I got this information from Truly Adventure, as usual. It's an amazing article by Diana Dilworth. I also read a really cool article in Vanity Fair by a relation to Jane Kendall Mason, Elaine Salierno Mason.
A lot of names.
A lot of names. A lot of places. Jane was born Jane Welsh in 1909, and her mom was like a single mom singing for rich people, and then meets a Wall Street tycoon and is like, this guy's worth $20 million, and we're in love, let's get married, and he legally adopts Jane. And so Jane ends up growing up in the situations where you're like, she's in Tuxedo Park, New York. They also have homes in Miami and in Washington, and they go sailing all the time, and she's in debutante balls, and she lives on an estate. It's that vibe, okay?
Old money.
Yeah. But I think she's more new money, but yeah. When she's 18, she gets married, and that's how she gets the name Mason. She marries George Grant Mason Jr., and it's like high society vibes. He's from Yale, and he's got a rich family, and he's actually head of Pan Am Caribbean operations in Cuba. So he's like, let's move to Havana. It's going to be rad. I have so many servants. And she's like, fun. So she lives in Savannah. And
she means she lives in Havana. She doesn't live in Savannah.
Oh, yeah. Not Savannah.
So
Havana.
They moved to Cuba, Havana. And she lives in Savannah, South Carolina.
She moves to Georgia.
Oh, Savannah, Georgia.
So, who's bad at geography now?
Me.
So they're on like a boat on a cruise, as you are when you're rich, and she meets Ernest Hemingway, and he's like, you're hot. My wife's pregnant. She's being so boring. And she's like, my husband's being kind of boring, too. You want to hang out? And they're like, yeah, let's walk around. And she's like 20 or something at the time. And
how old is Ernie?
Great question. He's older, for sure. But he likes her enough that he like goes to Havana to do a fishing trip. He's like, I'll be right back, to his wife. And then he's there for 2 months. So their affair is
pretty well documented.
Public.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weirdly public, but also it's high society. So there's something about everyone being really cool and private about it. Like, no one makes a scene. She really wants to be an artist. She's does all these things that are in that realm. She's also an author. And it feels like she's just hungry for like a crazier life, and she's rich, but it's never, I don't know. Everything I read about her was like, it's not enough. Like she'll like throw a party and dye pigeons a bunch of different colors and ask her servants to sew flowers onto all the tablecloths. And she'll be like, let's do a conga line. But she'll give everybody a real torch. Just like people are like, wow, you throw a crazy party. And Ernest will even remember her doing really crazy things like climbing up to his window to come into his room.
Okay, Romeo.
But it was 5 floors up. It was very dangerous. She does a lot of dangerous things. She once bet a pilot that she can do any stunt that he can without barfing, you know, any kind of spin, whatever. And she won that bet. She can't have kids. She adopts 2 kids and she loves them a lot by all accounts. But at the same time, I mean, we know she loved them because she went on a safari with her husband and she killed a zebra baby and had it made into a rocking horse for them.
Is that
so
love
we do
or
know
sick?
That she loved
yeah.
them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so she,
well,
she
was like,
them.
She did big sport hunting and like crazy fishing expeditions. She also things in Vogue. She had a pretty wild fucking life. But having kids was tricky. I think it was tricky. So she's having an affair with Ernest Hemingway. His wife is like pretending it's not happening and being very nice. They get along very well. And at one point, one weekend, they're like, let's go visit Jane, him and his whole family. And they're on her estate and she has to drive somewhere and her kid is in the car and his two kids are in the car and she drives off a cliff. And all the boys, the young boys, are okay. And she's the only one that gets hurt and she hurts her back really badly.
Wait, but she survives?
Yeah, she survives. They all do. It's really crazy. But she has a spinal cord injury. So she's like, go, you know. She's somebody that reacts very poorly to being bored. And at some point,
that makes sense
during
based
healing
on what
from
saying.
This injury. Okay, but at some point, this is like a stretch too far. At some point, she herself out of bed when she's like on bed rest for this injury and jumps out the window. And they're like, that is a suicide attempt. Like, that was very.
I don't think she's okay.
I don't think she's okay either. But her husband is like, oh, she's always got these changeable fits of elation and depression. And I'm like, I do think she needs to be medicated. He's like, it's just attention seeking. But he does send her to a hospital to do psychotherapy. And she says, oh, there's nothing like it for breaking down any slight ray of ego, which may have once illuminated an otherwise modest life. She's pretty intense and she doesn't like domesticity. They found all these letters that they're going through to learn more about her. And she wrote a letter to her friend that said that she was a too loving spirit tied down to a predatory feminine carcass. And she talks a lot about what motherhood is like and says that it's like reverting to the ancient role of amoeba. You know, those little creatures who go on dividing and subdividing themselves indefinitely. Like, it's like she's very smart and very depressed is the vibes that I get.
I wonder what connected her with Ernest Hemingway. Question mark. I wonder.
Well, that's the big thing is people are like, she didn't want to marry Ernest Hemingway. She wanted to be Ernest Hemingway. Like, she wanted, you know, like, she was drawn to him because she wanted to be him.
I actually don't love that because, like, maybe he wanted to be her. Like, I don't think she, like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And he, in some of his books that he wrote, he bases, he wrote To Have and To Have Not, which is like one of his bigger things, and he based, like, a character on her. Mm-hmm. And he's always finding ways to, like, put her in the things he wrote. He was fascinated by her. He had stuff published in Esquire, and the editor is Arnold Gingrich, and she meets Arnold Gingrich, who ends up being her fourth and final husband because she does just keep getting married to different people. But she stays with Arnold till she dies. And Ernest knows him. So it's like this whole thing where he's like pissed and he stops writing for Esquire. And somebody's like, why did you do that? And he said, well, Gingrich and I could not see eye to eye over a blonde. And he also, there was a quote attributed to him that said, I can't believe she married that little turd. So
I like
that. I wonder how he felt. So now she's living with Arnold. They live in a brownstone in the West Village. It's fabulous, except that Jane's bored, like she usually is. So she starts playing with a Ouija board. And through the Ouija board, she feels like a spirit contacts her and starts writing through her. So she's doing automatic writing is what it's called, I think. And it's basically where there's some source coming through your body. Like, you're a vessel, but you're not the brain.
Whoa.
So she's doing automatic writing and it's like nothing she's ever done before. And she can't tell if she's going crazy or if it's like, wow, this is really happening. And this is the most interesting thing that's ever happened to me. And then it gets a little out of hand when she's taking a bath one day and she basically feels like something's drowning her in the tub.
Oh, my God.
But we take it's interesting because she also has like the suicidal.
Yeah.
Ideations. It's very odd, but she feels like she's getting pushed under the water and finally she's able to like come up for air and she's so scared. She jumps out of the bath. She's naked. She's wet and she gets flung across the room into a tile wall. And so she's like, this is so scary. This house is haunted. This is something I called to the surface when I started doing this Ouija shit. And now it's getting like more and more physical and it's attacking her all the time. It starts to attack her all the time violently, like she's beaten up. And she's at first scared to tell her husband, but then it's just too crazy. Like, they have to move into a hotel, which is so funny. They move into the Lowell Hotel and they just keep getting alcohol deliveries. I think she likes to drink a lot. And then they get kicked out of the hotel because she'll fall asleep with like a lit cigarette and almost burn the hotel down. And they're like, please leave. So they do have to go home and they're like, what are we going to do? He's like, you need to go to the hospital and see somebody. So she goes to the chief of psychiatry at Roosevelt Hospital, and he's like, oh, you should see this colleague of mine who is in her 70s. She's not a doctor per se. Her name's Eileen, but she knows how to treat what I think you have, which is possession. So they go and meet her in the West Village. I picture they went to like Waverly Inn, mm-hmm. and they're explaining to her the history of this spirit. And Eileen's history is that her parents both committed suicide after she was born, oh. and she got raised by her aunt and uncle, and she would play with imaginary friends all the time and be like, I'm playing with the children, which, like, this needs to be a movie. And she felt like animals and children would appear to her and talk to her and engage with her all the time. And then when she's only six, she has a vision where she sees her aunt and her aunt's baby that's yet to be born and a very darkness around them. And then she finds out that her aunt gave birth and they both died
wow.
in childbirth. And so she's like, oh, shit, I have powers and I have to figure this out. I have to understand this.
Yeah.
But she's just a kid. So she just starts drowning her aunt's ducklings that her aunt really loves because she's like, I have to figure out about afterlife and I have to figure out about death. And she does say that when she drowned the ducklings, she would see spirits. She would see smoke come out of them and make shapes in the air. So that's some of Eileen's history. That's what's on her resume.
So that's her CV. Yeah.
This.
Yeah. That's like, I'd love to have this job helping you. Here's yeah. what I've killed.
I've
ducks.
Drowned a lot of ducklings.
I've killed a lot of ducklings.
I feel ready for this.
I'm really prepared. I've put in a lot of work. It was an unpaid internship in which I took on all the work myself and made myself do it for free. But I did it.
Mother duck said quack, 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 but none of her little ducklings came back because they were dead because Eileen had drowned them. She walked through this house and she's like, there is a ghost. She's like going around staring at walls, doing weird shit. And you know what? There is a ghost. Her name's Ruth. And facts, I think that she was part of the Salem witch trials, accused of being a witch.
Ruth was?
Uh-huh. And fact check, there is someone named Ruth Ayer who was an obscure victim in the trial.
So it'd be like hard to know her. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like they were like scholars might not know who this is. So there's no way that like Eileen or Jane did.
Right.
But they both are like, yes, it's definitely Ruth. But why she didn't die in the witch trials because she like died in the village. So like, what's her story? Oh, if you look at her history, she did escape. We don't know how. You would be spared from being killed if you were pregnant. You'd be spared from being killed if you confessed. So did she confess? Did she run away? Something happened. We know that she moved to Massachusetts, had kids, and that she and her daughter were killed by a contingent of French soldiers and American Indian warriors. Sorry, I'm laughing. I almost said American Ninja Warriors. She was not killed by American Ninja Warriors. She was killed by American Indian warriors. And Jane is like, there's weird knocks that happen, and there's a different spirit that has a different energy, and I'm scared of it, and I think it's somebody that was murdered in this house. So Jane, sort of living her dream, like, things are getting pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And Eileen's like, here's the thing. You can only fight fire with fire. We can only fight this ghost with a ghost. Here's the good news. Obviously, I know a ton of ghosts. There's this one guy I'm really good friends with. He's a Persian spirit named Yuvani. He can help me go to all these different realms. He calls himself Keeper of the Gate. This is pre-Ghostbusters, and we're in the West Village with Keeper of the Gate. Like,
wow.
It's amazing.
It's almost like Ghostbusters might have done some research. Crazy.
Almost.
Because I think that was just probably coincidence, I imagine, that when they looked up possession
and ghosts. That's a good
nickname,
Keeper of the Gate.
I'm sure Ghostbusters were like, this is a great story. Let's write a movie starring Bill Murray.
As Yuvani. So Yuvani comes into her body. They're doing like a seance. And Yuvani comes into her body and she's like, Yuvani, so good to see you. Can you find a spirit to talk to Ruth? And he's like, oh, let me think about it. You know what? Abdul Latif is the guy for the job. He's a 12th century Arabic physician. He's seen a lot of weird shit. And I think he should talk to Ruth. So she gets possessed by this guy, Abdul. Jane gets possessed by Ruth. And they have a conversation that at times is very scary. I mean, basically, he's like, I'm really glad you're here, Ruth. And Ruth is like shaking Jane's body up. Like she's like, Jane's convulsing and falling on the ground. And Abdul's like, you don't belong on this plane. You got to leave this woman alone. He says, and now you, Ruth, must go and let this child reside in her own world. She must be restored to herself and to herself alone. And there's like a fight where Ruth is I got to stay in this body. And finally, she gets shaken out of her. She's exorcised. And Jane falls on the ground and it's like, phew, we did it. That was great. And
good
then
work, everyone.
Eileen's like, oh, by the way, you talked about all that banging. There hasn't been a murder here. The knocking you've experienced, I think, comes from someone who's friendly. Yes, he likes the house. He likes you. But I've asked him to go away, to please go away in the name of God and leave everybody at peace until they are strong. I see him as a brash, cheerful, nonchalant, good-natured, but rough. And you're like, okay. So, like, everything's resolved. There were double ghosts, and we just figured it out in a night, which feels great.
Wow. Julie.
And just to put a cap on Jane's wackadoodle-doozer's life, she grows old with Arnold. She has a stroke. He starts having an affair with this woman, but stays with Jane, but is having an affair with this woman. And the woman that is his mistress said of that time that Jane was a hopeless and completely helpless, paralytic and ex-alcoholic, cared for like a rare orchid. You're like, whoa, cared for like a rare orchid. So just like, I don't know what to think of that. Then in 1976, Arnold dies of throat cancer. 4 years later, Jane dies of throat cancer, twinning. They get buried together and their tombstone is like a big model of a book, like an open book. And on the page that's on her side, it says, talents too many, not enough of any.
Wait, talents too many?
Not enough of any. It's such a, like, it's almost like she could do everything, but not any one thing good enough is how it feels to me. Like, it was sort of like,
what?
She had this wild life, but, like, maybe never found her passion or maybe never was seen as a true success in any one thing. There's, like, it's an interesting quote. I think she might have picked it. There's definitely a level of
dissatisfaction. I would hope she picked it and not anyone else.
Picked it for her. Oh, I'm sure she did pick it.
That sounds so awkward.
It so sounds like her and the kinds of things she wrote. But the more I read about this woman, I was like, you had a wacky life, lady.
Wow.
So I just wanted to share it with you.
I'm excited to read her.
There's enough haunting stuff
her,
in it.
I wish I could see her or her books. I want to read what she has to write. But it sounds like someone who might have some mental health issues.
For sure.
Hold on, I have to cough. I'm going to mute myself. If you're our sponsors, talk now. Okay. All right. So I got this stuff. I was, like I had said early in the episode, I went to the Titanic Museum and I saw like missed, like near-death experience of like missing the Titanic. And so I was inspired and I went to a list verse, which we love to see just to get some ideas for stories. Mm-hmm. And then I found one story and I was like, let's bring up the Wikipedia page. And I did a deep dive on the Wikipedia page. I'm telling the story of Aum Shinrikyo. I think, again, it's a Japanese name, so it's going to be, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. So I want to introduce you to Chizuo Matsumoto. And he's this guy. He's growing up. He had some, like, I think he almost went like blind. He was blind in one eye, but growing up, he was like a bully, not a great guy. He went and he did some educational stuff. It doesn't matter. You know what? Frankly, I don't think we need to know why, how he grew up. I want to introduce you to where we're going to get started. It is the 80s, the late 80s, and Chizuo Matsumoto is teaching a yoga meditation class in his one-bedroom apartment in Tokyo. And this yoga practice, this yoga studio, is known as Aomu Shinsen no Kai, which stands for Immortal Mountain Wizard Association, which is incredible. Ooh. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So what starts as like a yogic meditation experience starts growing in the next couple of years, and it becomes a Buddhist new religious movement. It is 1989, and he turns this practice into a religious organization, and it becomes what people refer to it as a religion for the elite, and he names it Aum Shinrikyo. Aum Shinrikyo. Shinrikyo? Yeah. Aum Shinrikyo. And it gets larger and larger, and that stands for Religion of Aum Supreme Truth. That's kind of like what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he does is it kind of is like a hodgepodge of religious practices, it seems, based on what I was reading. And I'm not here a religious scholar, but I'm just going to list some things that they're like using to make up this religion. They're using Indian Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, some Hinduism. They take on some Christian millennial ideas, and then they throw some yoga in there. There's some Nostradamus writings. It's like a real, like, you know, collection of belief systems. And I think it's pretty, from what I can see, like, I don't know what their end goal is, but I do know it's pretty fear-based. So around this time, Chizuo Matsumoto, he changes his name to Shoko Asahara. And get this, you're never going to believe this. Do you know who he is?
No.
Imagine it's a religion that's being built. They're figuring out what it is. Can you imagine who he declares himself to be?
Jesus Christ.
Quinn, if I was near you, I would give you a high five. I would give you a fucking gold star. But for now, I just have to tell you, I would give you those things right here. He declares
Nobody
that he is
original.
So original. Now, you're never going to guess it, but this does become a cult. Okay, so he is also known as Japan's only fully enlightened master. He also casually refers to himself as Lamb of God, a.k.a. Jesus, basically synonymous. And the mission of this religion is he's supposed to take on all the sins of the world, and then he's going to transfer his spiritual power to his followers, meanwhile taking away their sins. It also has an end date kind of vibe because we're a doomsday. We're a doomsday religious culty vibe, okay? So he believes that a nuclear apocalypse is imminent. It's going to happen soon. And his belief system is, I wouldn't say it's the most accepting. So he thinks that it's going to be led by the U.S., which he refers to as the Beast, along with Jewish financiers, Freemasons, some British royal family members, and war profiteers. And they're going to lead a Western nuclear attack in Japan in either 2000 or 2006. And from there, World War III is going to start. And I have to say, sounds pretty scary.
Sheesh.
Sheesh.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity is going to end, but I have some good news. If you are one of the elite who joined Aum, you're in luck because their goal is to spread the word of salvation and their goal is to survive the end times.
What a good goal.
It's a really sound goal if it wasn't like putting people down around him. But anyway, so it's a cult. Here we are. Here's some claims that they have, like why you should join Aum Shinrikyo. They claim to cure physical ailments, have any, improve health. I wouldn't have a cough anymore if I joined them. Realize life goals by improving intelligence and using positive thinking. I don't hate that. And concentrating on what's important at the expense of leisure by practicing ancient teachings. I don't want to get rid of leisure in my life. So that's where you lost me. It is one of the fastest growing religious groups in Japan's history. Now, again, it's a cult, so we're getting into some weird practices. To this day, many of their practices remain private, but it is thought that they used hallucinogens in their practice, like LSD. They also used their own kind of version of yoga, and I'm using air quotes to describe yoga because they would have people like hung upside down. They would be giving shock therapy. Oy. It's the late 80s.
Torture yoga.
Torture yoga. Yeah.
So Pilates.
Have you seen that reformer machine? Those electric shocks on the reformer machine really gets my ass in gear. It's the late 80s, and some controversy gets thrown to the group. They are accused of deceptions of recruits. They're accused of holding new recruits against their will. They're accused of forcing recruits to stay against their will, and also to force and also forcing them to donate money. They would also, and I wasn't sure about this, but I'm going to read what I read, which was they would take patients into hospitals and then they would force them to pay huge medical bills. I don't know how legal that is, but whatever. They also are accused of having one of a former cult member who tried to leave murdered in 1989.
Whoa.
So all these, it's not good, right? Like, they're getting some bad press, some bad PR. It's October 1989, and an anti-cult lawyer by the name of Tsutsumi Sakamoto, he threatens to sue the organization. And at that point, if he sues this organization, they have no money. They're going to be bankrupt. It's life and death, right? So he's putting a case together, and a TV station interviews this anti-cult lawyer who's suing them. And he's interviewed with this by this talk show, and he's giving them all this information or all these details that he knows about the cult. The network that has recorded this interview then secretly shows the interview to the group, which essentially is like not a good thing for the TV network to do because it breaks the protection of sources, right? If you have a source coming in whistleblowing, they didn't protect him. Instead, they showed the group. The group is like, you have to, we're going to try to get this interview canceled. You can't show up, blah, blah, blah. What we do know is what happens next is that the next month after they show the group this interview, Tsutsumi Sakamoto, his wife, and his 14-month-old child all go missing. They're never found. The police are not able to solve the case. Again, there's like a bunch of conversations around this cult. What's going on? A cartoonist, Yoshinori Kobayashi, he starts satirizing the cult in newspapers, right? He starts like putting them on blast in the media. And in 1993, there is an assassination attempt on his life. The cult is pretty active in retribution, and they don't get even, they murder. You know what I mean? So it is June 29th, 1993, and they're located in an area in Tokyo, and their neighbors around them start smelling some like weird fumes. They don't totally know what's going on. The next day, people in the area, they start to feel really sick. They start throwing up. The following day, the police are called to there, and the cult, they see this cult has this weird device on their roof that's spraying aerosol particles around the area. And it's like black oily substance on the buildings and on people's skin. And people are getting sick, complaining of smells. The police are like, you got to stop spraying this weird aerosol thing.
Yeah.
This is not cool.
Like, you're killing everyone.
And so they put the device away and no one really thinks much of it. Okay. And the police like don't know what the substance is. They move on essentially. So it's 1993 and the cult starts to work on this thing called sarin, which is a nerve agent. Do you know what sarin is?
Yes, I do. Is that what they were spraying?
No, it's worse, and I'll tell you later. So okay. Even in low doses, death can occur in 1 to 10 minutes. It is colorless. It is odorless. It causes respiratory paralysis. While they're developing this, while they're trying to like get this nerve agent, they're testing it on sheep in West Australia. It kills 29 sheep. It is June 27th, 1994, so about a year after this weird aerosol thing was happening. They take a converted refrigerator truck and they release sarin near the homes of these judges who are overseeing a lawsuit concerning a real estate dispute, which is predicted to go against the cult. This activity kills 8 and it injures about 500 more people.
Oh my God.
The police investigate. The police cannot implicate the cult at this time. So they have not enough evidence. They have not enough to put this cult away. It's the end of 1994. The cult breaks into the Mitsubishi Heavy Industries in an attempt to steal technical documents on military weapons, right? So their whole thing is survival of the end times. So they're like, we have to get weapons. We have to get weapons of war. At one point, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but they found a way to smuggle in an AK-47 so they could recreate it. They're taking it apart so they can reverse engineer it so they can build up the massive amount of weapons.
Wow, they have like pretty extreme.
It's pretty goals. Extreme. It's actually
we like it when a cult keeps to themselves.
I'd much rather that, because here at this point, they're not going to be classified as one yet. But spoiler alert, later they're classified as a terrorist organization. Between December 1994 and January 1995, so within a month or two, they're able to synthesize the sarin, the nerve agent, into syringes, and they use it to attack three people. The three people that they attack in these 2 months is a person who they believe assisted a former member of the cult, a suspected spy of the cult, and a member, there's like a group victim society for the cult, right? So they're like developing so that people could come to a safe place. So a member of that group's victim society, they are also targeted. February 1995, members kidnap the brother of a woman who escaped. And what happened was, is before he was kidnapped, he was getting calls asking for his sister's whereabouts. And he was like, I'm not giving you anything. I'm not giving you anything. Before he disappeared, he left a note at his house saying, if I disappear, I was abducted by the Aum Shinrikyo.
Well, we love it when people are like, I weirdly know exactly what's about to happen to me.
They take him from Tokyo. They take him from the street in Tokyo to one of their headquarters near Mount Fuji, where he is killed and his corpse is destroyed in a microwave-powered incinerator.
Oh, my God.
So at this point, the police are gathering information. We have some people that have left the cult that are talking, but it's like very dangerous to be talking to police. It is March 1995, and the police make plans to raid all of these cult's properties across Japan. Asahara, he is tipped off, and he orders an attack to divert the police. This is fucking dark, as if it hasn't been dark already.
Right.
It is March 20th. Members coordinate, and they release a chemical weapon, sarin, on five trains in the Tokyo subway system. They gas the Tokyo subway system with sarin. They kill 13 people. They severely injure 54 and injured 980. But people believe it is as high as 6,000.
Holy shit.
And they were trying to divert all the police to the subway. That didn't work. The raids still happen. It did not stop them from raiding all of their locations. In the raid, they find explosives, they find weapons, they find those guns they're trying to manufacture. They also discover more chemical weapons that include Ebola cultures. And so they finally realize that while they have all this access to this chemical weapon warfare, kind of essentially, they realize that they have access to all this chemical weapons. And so they decide to go back and test that black oily substance.
Oh, right.
From 1993.
Right.
They test it and they found that the device on their roof was releasing anthrax.
Oh, God.
Obviously.
But nobody died.
Well, here's why nobody died. Instead of using like the deadly version of it, they accidentally used a strain developed for vaccinations. So people still had physical sickness and illness, but instead of killing thousands, they just immunized their victims against the disease, luckily.
Oh, how odd.
Like that could have killed thousands of people.
Right.
150 cult members are arrested right away. They still can't find the head guy. This happened March 20th. It is escalating from the subway attacks. March 30th, 10 days later, the chief of the National Police Agency is shot four times near his house and is seriously wounded. He survives. Some suspect that it's the cult, but nobody is charged. April 23rd, the head of the cult's Ministry of Science is stabbed outside its Tokyo headquarters, and there are 100 reporters there seeing the stabbing happen. They get the guy, but the motive is unknown. I think I know the motive. I think they're trying to destroy this cult. May 5th, 2 weeks after that, a burning bag is found in a subway station. They put it out, but in
it... A burning bag?
It's like a burning bag. Well, they don't know what's in it. It's like a paper bag burning.
Okay.
They don't know what's in it, so they put out the fire. they open it up. It is a cyanide explosive device. If it was not extinguished in time, it could have killed up to 10,000 commuters. Later, they will discover there are more of these devices in paper bags that have been undetonated all around subway stations. So they knew it could have been a coordinated attack, but fortunately, only one was attempted to be detonated. On May 16th, they find Asahara hiding in the wall of one of the buildings the cult owns. On the same day, the cult mails, once he's found, the head guy, the guru, on the same day that he's found, the cult mails a parcel bomb to the governor of Tokyo, and it blows off his secretary's hands.
Oh, my God.
Once they have the leader, Asahara.
You're such buttholes.
They're like, it's so insane. I was looking at this, and the near-death experience was the anthrax. It was the fact that they just happened to use the wrong strain. It's like these near-death experiences. And then I looked into this cult, and I was like, holy shit, this is no fucking joke.
You're like, too bad sometimes they didn't fuck up.
Yeah, they didn't fuck up a lot of the time, and they killed a lot of fucking people. Asahara, once they get him, he is charged with 23 counts of murder and 16 other offenses. Sorry, let me go back. Once they have all of these cult members in custody, they're able to go back and revisit the Sakamoto disappearance. I don't know if you remember that. He's the anti-cult lawyer whose whole family disappeared.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
is discovered that the cult did murder all three
of them.
Yeah. Him, his wife, and his 14-month-year-old child. And the bodies were dumped in separate locations by cult members. In 1996, a year after this, all of the fuckery of the subway and all that stuff happened.
So
the group
fuckery.
Files bankruptcy and they lose their status as a religious entity. However, they can continue to operate under the Constitution, freedom of religion. After this is all happening, while Asahara is in jail awaiting trial, they are funded by a successful computer business and donations. Asahara's two young sons try to replace him as the guru. In 2000, the group rebrands. They become Aleph. They announce a change in doctrine. But by 2000, they have around 1,600 members, which is crazy. And they're from all over the world. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty decent Russian contingency in this cult. But at that time in 2000, when they're, quote, rebranding, they apologize for the attacks and they establish a compensation fund, which I can say, why don't you just start a new religion? It feels like this isn't working. Let's go somewhere else. In 2007, the cult is designated as a terrorist organization by Russia, Canada, Japan, France, Kazakhstan, and the entire EU. The U.S., it was considered a terrorist organization until 2022, when it was determined that the cult is essentially defunct. July 6, 2018, after exhausting all appeals, Asahara and six of his followers are executed for the 1995 attacks and other crimes, and they are executed by hanging. Later that year, six more followers were executed. In his will, Asahara says that his ashes should go to his youngest daughter, who wasn't really into the cult. In fact, she was really...
She's like, no thanks.
She's like, yeah, essentially she's like, no thanks. She urged her relatives and the other cult members. She said, put an end to Aum and stop hating society. Yeah. She was like, I'm just going to throw these ashes out. I'm going to throw them in the ocean. And then she was challenged by his wife or something, his third wife, I don't know, some wife. And the ashes ended up staying in a detention center for the time being because they were afraid.
I like that he's in jail, but he's dead.
He's in jail, but he's dead. His ashes are in jail, but they're doing that because they're afraid that people will get these ashes and use it as sort of like a relic or something to
Ouija board him back?
To Ouija board him back into life. No, they're afraid that they're going to use it as a way to sort of invigorate the cult. If they have this like piece of him, they can make it a shrine to him and feel like the cult will come together behind it. And of course, the death of these men doesn't stop everything entirely because the men are put to death July 2018. January 1st, 2019, at 12:10 a.m., so 10 minutes after the New Year's, nine people are injured when a car drives deliberately into the crowds of Tokyo. The driver is an alms sympathizer who admits to driving his car into the crowd to protest the death penalty of the cult members.
Oy.
You have this cult that is founded on doomsday preparation,
mm-hmm.
and they just start killing with reckless abandon and using mm-hmm. chemical weapons to try to accomplish this. It's fucking wild.
That's so scary.
Yeah. And they use, like, it's scary because it's, like, using the things, especially being in a big city like New York, where you're like, mm-hmm. I use the subway every fucking day.
Yeah.
It's like they created such profound terror in Tokyo.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, like, yeah, what's crazy, though, is, like, they existed. Like, all the stories I was telling you, and they're like, the police didn't arrest anyone. The police didn't know have any suspects until they fucking hit the subway. Crazy.
Well, I'm going to have nightmares.
Hey, isn't that why you did this podcast?
No. I don't know why I did this podcast. I think I was just hungry and I got confused.
I think I was just hungry and I was trying to avoid eating, so I thought I'd research some weird stories.
That's a wild tale, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
Leave us a review, you guys. Come on, why not? Cassandra Joy said we're truly, darkly lovely.
Have we gotten any
Paige
bad reviews
Barber
lately?
Said we're down to earth. No, nobody gives us bad reviews. Nobody gives us bad reviews. See you guys next week.
See you next week. Goodbye, everybody.